All right, I'm here with Will Straka. He's a current linebacker over at Boston College, also is a founder of Athletes U, which is how I met him. Will, go ahead and take the floor. Tell him a little bit about yourself and your crazy story so far, man.
Yeah, for sure, Trenton. And first thing, like, I just appreciate you having me on, bro. I know we kind of go back a little bit, but as far as me, man, like, I was from a pretty small town growing up. And I know you kind of talk a lot about that in your content and stuff too. Like, and I fell into a lot of the same pitfalls, to be honest, like kind of just thinking that balling out on Friday nights would be enough. And I was like training super hard and doing those things too. But as far as like high school and stuff, yeah, like small town, my junior year was like my first big year. And I thought I was about to go like D1, like my first two games, I had 11 touchdowns in the first two games. And like, I thought I was the shit. And I mean, obviously like I wasn't, but didn't really do much like outreach or anything like that. Like posted very little on Twitter or used Twitter at all. Didn't really send any emails or anything like that. But yeah, and then COVID happens the spring of my junior year. Like recruiting gets shut down for the most part. We did like virtual visits and things like that. But yeah, senior year, like ended up with a couple offers, D2. And then I'm from Wisconsin. So obviously all the WIAC schools there in Wisconsin, like Whitewater, La Crosse, Platteville were really my last three. And I thought I wanted to be an engineer. So I went to Platteville and still, you know, wouldn't really trade that or wouldn't go back and change it because great school, great staff. And I really enjoyed my time there. So I went there for 4 years. But
yeah, awesome, man. And then obviously, you know, that's kind of the end of the story, right? Because, you know, not currently at Platteville as well.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess, I don't know if you want to, because we were talking about this prior, like I don't even know your story of like how you ended up where you're at now.
Right.
Went from the elusive, I think what, you know, whatever current high school kid thinks they're going to do, you know, go to D3 to D1, right. Power 4 school.
Right.
Obviously, you played really well at Platteville and balled out. You know, give us a little bit of background on, like, what happened at Platteville as far as your story, as well as, like, how you went from, you know, Platteville to Boston College.
Yeah, definitely. So, honestly, I came in, like, I thought I was going to, like, be the guy and shit because, like, I was the guy in high school. Obviously, right? So I come into Platteville. There was like, at that time, it was a fourth year and a fifth year, and they still had 2 years left of eligibility or 3 years left or something crazy like that. Like that COVID year, med year, one guy transferred in from Mankato. It's like they were great to play behind and learn from and all those things. But like, I knew I probably wasn't going to play. So I gray shirted, which most people probably don't even know what a gray shirt is.
Yeah, it's like, super common in JUCO. I always tell that about people. Yeah, gray shirting is a little hack for sure. It's interesting that they let you do that at D3.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like most guys do. Or
that's awesome. Yeah, that's good that they do that. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely like you don't see it as commonly like smaller 4 years because most guys are just like want to get their school done anyway. So, but yeah, that's good that they do that for sure.
Yeah, and like to be honest, like if I didn't gray shirt, then I wouldn't be here at BC right now because it kind of gave me that extra year. So, yeah, basically like gray shirt, you
I was gonna say if you want to go into gray shirt, go for it. Yeah,
yeah, like you can't really like you're not really part of the team even like you can't practice. Like it's different than a red shirt where obviously a red shirt you can practice still, you can be part of the team, you can still play in four games with a red shirt too. And things like that. But yeah, gray shirt, you're not even like part of the team really. So like it was my first semester. Like I was really just doing like school and lifting weights. And from there, like use the off season to get bigger, get faster, get stronger. And then coming into my sophomore season. So I didn't even start at linebacker, my first 2 years. So it would have been my whatever gray shirt freshman and gray shirt sophomore year. I didn't even start a linebacker because those two guys were still those, whatever, we had a Mike and a Will and they were both older. So I was a second string Mike for those 2 years. And Like that second year, I rotated in every like third series or something like that, but didn't really play much, to be honest. I was more just like a special teams guy. And then it was last year I really got my first shot, like team captain, starting at Mike, and had, you know, a pretty good year. And as a team, we had a pretty good year too, to be honest. We won conference, which was like super awesome, super cool experience. Made the playoffs and then lost in the second round of the playoffs. But no, so that was obviously like start of December. And then we finished up the semester, went home for Christmas, and then, you know, Claude too. So me and Claude obviously started Athletes U together. We go down to Arizona just for like a trip. We actually see Nick. So we go down to Arizona for like the entire month of January and just work out. Like we work super hard on AU. We're like working out, we're doing all these things. And I kind of just like realized, like, you know, I kind of want more for myself. Like, you know, I had a pretty good year. Like I obviously learned a lot helping out the guys that I had helped out with, through like AU and stuff like that too. So I thought, shit, I mean, why not just give it a shot? And I actually, like, you were like, shit, first or second person that I talked to, Trenton. I mean, I've obviously, you know, a whole lot about the subject, and obviously with transfers too, because, you know, you were a JUCO guy and I had more experience with like just going right from high school to college, right? So yeah, you were like the second guy that I talked to. I think I even talked to you before I talked to my parents about it, just because I wanted to know, like, hey, what are the options here? And you obviously had some awesome insight for me and kind of pushed me over the edge a little bit. So, I mean, shit, bro, without you, I don't know if I'd be here, man. But
that's no, funny, because I don't remember from my end of the conversation being like, I was like, I don't know if I'll end up doing it or not after my talk, but that's good to hear. That's good to hear.
No, dude, that's funny. Yeah, end up decided I'm going to hit the portal, go back for, you know, spring semester, talk to my coaches, decide, yeah, hey, this is what I'm going to do. And then from there, like, yeah, I couldn't do team lifts. I didn't do spring ball, obviously, stuff and stuff like that. So it was really just me working out on my own for the entire spring semester. I started out, you know, emailing coaches. I was on Twitter, but like, it was kind of a weird thing, because like my coaches knew that I was in the portal, but like they didn't want to tell the team that I was, because like I was a captain, and I mean, you know, so it was kind of like a weird point in time where like there was only really a couple people on the team knew that I was in the portal. So like, I didn't really put anything out on like Twitter or anything like that. And I think that just kind of goes to show like the power and how important it is of like outbound through like email and through like Twitter DMs, because I didn't post like anything and obviously was still able to get some offers. So I started out before I had even like sent anything out, like I had a couple D2s follow me and I was talking to a couple D2s. First D2 that hit me up was Permian Basin down in Texas. So I actually went down on a visit there. They brought me down for an OV, which, so that was my first time in Texas. It was pretty cool. And then there's a lot of like FCS, of like the Midwest FCS schools that I thought I might end up at. So like Eastern Illinois, Lindenwood, like I took an OV down to Lindenwood too. So it was a lot of those, like, see, like Pioneer League, some of the Patriot League, the OVC too. Then, so actually when I was on my way to the airport to go down to Texas, I get a text from the linebacker coach at BC, because he had followed me back maybe a couple of weeks before that, but he had shot me a message on Twitter and I think he just asked for like my phone number or something like that. And he wasn't even the guy that had reached out to me on my phone. It was the GM who had reached out. It was like, shit, 6 a.m. driving to the airport to head down to Texas. So I have a quick conversation with the GM on the phone, and he basically laid out a couple different things. So I was like, they were pretty short on linebacker. Like they had a ton of injuries. They had moved a running back to linebacker. And even like right now, like, you know, we're a little bit short on linebacker. So obviously having the opportunity to play is something that is pretty interesting to me. So he had basically laid out like I could try to undergrad transfer, or the most straightforward route to go would be to graduate transfer. So I was like, shoot, okay. So I talked to my advisor, wasn't sure if I was going to be able to do it. I was studying civil engineering, but there was one class, like the last class, like the senior design class, I would have had to take. They don't offer during the summer because it's like a group-based class. He pretty much told me, like, yeah, you probably won't be able to graduate and, like, do the grad transfer. I was like, oh, shit, all right, well, that kind of sucks. And then a couple of weeks went by. Like, I visited Texas, Permian Basin, and then, yeah, a couple of weeks go by, and BC hits me back up again and asked me to come out just on, like, an unofficial for their last spring practice. It was, like, middle of April for their last spring practice. So I fly out there. Obviously pretty awesome. Like, great staff. I mean, campus is, like, super beautiful. Met the staff. Met Coach O'Brien. Like, went into his office. He laid out, you know, kind of how it might go and things like that. He basically said, like, yeah, we don't have a scholarship spot for you, but what we can do is offer you a preferred walk-on and then give you money through, like, NIL, right? So basically it comes out to, like, a partial scholarship, which I think is interesting and maybe, you know, might be a way to kind of navigate some of those new, like, roster limits and things like that too. Is like, obviously with the no more walk-ons or with the roster limit going to be at 105, right, everyone might be making some sort of money, or everyone might be having some of their, you know, school covered for, even if you're not truly on scholarship. So took that visit. Like, they offered and I knew I was probably going to commit. I had an OV set up for Lindenwood like 2 days after that. I still took it, knowing that I probably was still going to commit to BC, but figured I'd take it. And yeah, I went to BC that weekend, went to Lindenwood like Monday, Tuesday, and then Wednesday I committed to BC. So
love it. Love it, man. That's and so do you end up grad transferring? Did you end up like finishing out your part? You just switched degrees, I imagine, to get the grad transfer done.
So I was I was in this like strength class. And I was talking to my professor and I said that I was going to go visit BC. So I was going to have to miss class. And then, like, he didn't know that I was transferring or anything like that. So I gave him the whole rundown, like everything about, like, grad transfer. He said, yo, you should do this thing called a professional studies degree. Like, he had some student who did it like last year. Like, it's like a brand new degree. Like, it's like 2 years old, but he had some like army kid do it last year who like had to graduate like the next semester. So I was like, shit, all right, professional studies? Like, yeah, man, like, how do I learn more about this? So, yeah, I went to go talk to, like, the advisor for it, and they basically broke it down for me. As long as you have, like, 120 credits, then you can graduate. So I'm like, shit, dude, let's go. Let's go. So
new liberal arts degree just dropped, professional studies.
Yeah, so so I got switched to that. But still got to walk at the engineering graduation ceremony.
Awesome, man.
Yeah, funny enough. So
that is funny. Yeah, I mean those just the transfer requirements sometimes are like just the different rules obviously are so unique. Because I imagine the big holdup to doing an undergrad transfer was probably just you were gonna lose a lot of units, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And like for BC, you have to have 60 credits at BC to graduate with your undergrad. So that's
basically, so you're going to come in as a academic junior.
Yeah. And like you basically lose half of your college.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And that's very common. And yeah, it's good that you got that done. Cause obviously, yeah, you're not going to, I'm sure you were like, I don't know if I want to sacrifice like the next, you know, my whole degree essentially to play another year. So.
Right.
Yeah, it's good that you're able to get that done. That's definitely a big pain of the transfer process that people don't often talk about is how like your units have to transfer and how that actually works. And of course, like I imagine Boston College may have been picky about which units specifically transfer because obviously they're a higher academic institution.
Yeah.
Right. So it's easier when you just grab that degree and you're like, yeah, I'm a grad transfer, and then you can just get your graduate started. Yeah. So
For sure.
That's awesome, man.
Definitely.
And then I'm curious, like, because I want to touch on the gray shirt stuff a little bit, because obviously I don't get the opportunity to talk about this a ton. It's super common in JUCOs, the way that it works, at least. And I imagine they did similar at Platteville, is that you have to under-enroll, not be a full-time student. Is that how you guys did it? Less than 12 units? And
no, so
just didn't apply?
Yeah, like, it's basically, like, the way that I think about it is, like, you're basically just like a normal student, almost. Like, you can still take how many of our classes that you want. So, like, I was in 15 credits my freshman year fall. And, yeah, you can, like, go and watch practice. You can do things like that. You can lift weights. But, like, you can't actually suit up and practice. You can't travel with the team and do things like that. So, yeah.
That's really interesting, yeah. Yeah. I'm not too sure the ruling on that, because the whole reason we do that at JUCO is because usually your clock starts once you take a full time load. But I also don't know. That's interesting. I honestly want to go check some rules now because of that. But no, that's interesting for sure. I mean, obviously it worked out because you did the transfer and everything like that, and you have the eligibility. Like you said, you wouldn't have had the eligibility otherwise. But yeah, right. Gray shirting is always a good move. I know some schools do it. It's awesome that they do it over there. It's a great way to extend things. Obviously, still kind of got to like get into the college early, get things felt out. Like it's a good kind of like gap semester almost where you're getting a feel for things.
Right. And then you have basically that whole fall camp, because I came in for that first fall camp. You get to lift weights and you get to do the entire off-season like workout program too. Then you get to do spring ball like before your clock even starts, and you have to take that first year. Or then you get to come in for your sophomore year, which is basically your freshman year on the field. So now it's super helpful for me. So
that's awesome, man. Awesome. Well, yeah, I appreciate sharing that story. I guess one good question would be, and I just talked to a guy earlier today that transfer from a D2 to an FCS school, and you obviously did the more drastic comparison of D3 to P4, which I think maybe like maybe a bottom of the barrel NIA school would be more drastic than that, or a bottom of the barrel D3 school. But what is that comparison like in terms of talent? Is it as drastic as people think it is? I mean, I can obviously go on with my thoughts, but like you're the one who's experiencing, so I'd love to hear your take on that stuff.
Right. No, that's definitely a great question, and like something I've been asked a lot. Like, oh, like how different is it from D3 to actually Power 4? And I think a big realization that I've had is like, no matter where you play at, if you're a starter or if you're in the 2 deep, like you have to be good at football. Like you have to be talented and know what you're doing and like know the playbook and show up every day and, you know, like know what's going on. So whether you're at a D3 or whether you're at a Power 4, the same holds true. And I don't know if I can make a super bold claim like, yo, if you start at a D3, you could probably be in the 2 or 3 deep at a Power 4. But I mean, just straight up, there are guys that might be at a Power 4. That like wouldn't even play at a D3, right? And you can see a whole bunch of guys like bouncing back too from D1 down to D2 or D3 or however it is, and they might not even play there. In terms of that, like, the starters and those who play are definitely, you know, more talented, bigger, faster. But you know, if you are a guy that's like a top tier, you know, your starter and you make an impact on your team, maybe you're all conference or something like that at a D2 and a D3, and it's maybe one of the better ones. I mean, you can probably, you know, make the 2 or 3 deep. Like if you're a linebacker or like one of those type guys, you can probably play on like special teams. I mean, I'm just kind of speaking from my experience, kind of how it worked for me enough. Everyone's bigger. Everyone's faster for the most part. In terms of like weight room strength, there are honestly a lot more guys at the D3 at Platteville that were in just weight room stronger than guys here, which, you know, I've kind of tried to think about too, because like I'm obviously in the training world thinking about, why might that be? but might be like a lot of these kids that, you know, go to these like smaller D3s might not have the same like resources or coaching. So like, what do they do? Just to, like, go lift weights, like shit, just go squat, just go bench and like do these things. I mean, I had a lot of teammates who were pretty damn strong at Platteville. Like, I wasn't the strongest linebacker there. And we had a lot of guys who were shit, squatting 500, 600 pounds, benching three plates or more. And, you know, BC, I've like one of the best squatters. So, you know, not sure what that means, but, you know, personal experience.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, it almost shows that like the lifts, obviously, at least the strength of the lift isn't necessarily correlated to like on-field performance directly, exactly. At least, which is definitely exactly, interesting. Yeah. It's much more about explosion and stuff like that. Though, sure. To be fair, I'm not the one whose expertise is in training by any means. But yeah, I'm curious, I guess, yeah, I appreciate your enlightenment on that, because I think it's, I played NAA, I played JUCO, and, you know, I thought at like Morningside, like, we had this one linebacker who was just amazing, no question, could have played at least group of five. Yeah. Just an absolute stud. And you know, you never decided to transfer or anything like that, because he was pretty content with being there and had a blast at Morningside. But there's a ton of talent all over the place. And
that's right.
Yeah, it's crazy to say that, you know, hey, like D1, you know, is that much better. And especially with the transfer portal, things have evened out quite a bit to an extent, where guys can move around, and, you know, good high schoolers are getting to lower level programs. I'm sure you see that with the athletes that you're working with, where probably in your recruiting class, or I mean, you kind of started to get into that point where like the recruiting classes were effective when you were getting recruited. But you know, definitely older classes, like, you know, we see guys that definitely were FCS at least, or FBS, going D2, and it's just like, yeah, that's just kind of how it is. Like, you have to be so much better than you know, kind of what the standard was before. And I'm guessing you're kind of seeing the same things too.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and I think even with the transfer portal and stuff like that, like really just college football in general is like getting more and more valuable, right? Like, now athletes are getting paid like shit. You know, some of those like Power Four schools, like just in terms of getting paid from the school, like it's like $15 million. And that's like guaranteed, right? Like, that's not even any sort of like outside money from like collectives or signing your own deals or doing those things. And I mean, shit, yeah, college football is like one of the highest viewerships out of like any sport, like professional or anything. So I think, yeah, obviously the portal and stuff has affected it too. But like, just in terms of how valuable college football is, like, it's gone way up since, you know, even the 2010s. So,
yeah, 100%. Again, I know your expertise is in training. That's kind of like what you guys do most of the time at Athlete TU. I know you guys do, you know, other stuff outside of that, but with how you obviously, you know, developed a lot, I'm sure, as an athlete, like throughout your time at Platteville, and then, you know, obviously made the transition to Boston College, like, what do you think were some things that, you know, help you with your training, or just helped you with your development, stuff that you learned, stuff that you try to apply to other athletes, and, you know, some of your philosophies there as well?
Yeah, right. No, that's a great question. And even going back to what we were just kind of talking about like the weight room numbers and things like that, like my freshman year of college, like whatever, I came into college like cleaning like 185 or some shit. And like, even now, like, I worked on it throughout my entire college career, but like, that isn't the reason why, like, you know, I got the opportunity to play here. Like, I still only clean like 245, 255. Like, I cleaned 275 like one time, and like, that's the most I've ever done by a long shot. And it was this last summer. And even like benching, like I've never benched over 315. My squat, the most I've ever done is like 500. So like, my squat's definitely my best lift. Like, I've done a shit ton of weight room work, and like, especially growing up. But I think a lot of guys, like we were kind of saying, focus on that a lot and think like, oh, if I just squat 500, or if I can just bench 315, like D1 coaches are going to see that and like be interested in me. You know, I don't think that's true. you know, probably too, like film is the most important part. Getting coaches to see your talent and your character are like the most important pieces of that. So in terms of like training, that's why we kind of transitioned into like a lot more like speed and explosiveness training. Cause when we were training in person and working with like whole teams, right, it's you do kind of your warm up and your speed work, then you go down in the weight room and you do your weight room work. And that's most like basically like every team does that, right? And most like most student athletes, most players do that too. And that's just like the norm now, is like you go and lift with your team. So really looking at like what more can you do, or how can you be different? Because if everyone's doing that now, that's just the new average and that's the new standard. So like, you know, you're not going to be able to achieve better results when you're just doing the bare minimum of what everyone does. That's why we kind of started working with like the speed stuff and saw some pretty good results. Because not a lot of schools and not a lot of teams work on like that speed and doing some of those things. So like for me, I got a whole lot faster, and you know, as a linebacker, that's pretty important, like playing sideline to sideline, being able to fill gaps faster and things like that too. So seeing it with myself, and then obviously seeing it with our athletes, like that kind of game speed is, you know, super important and something that we have found that translates to better play, more tackles for loss, more touchdowns if you're on offense and things like that. So,
yeah. Yeah, that's all important stuff. I just was kind of counting my own like kind of high school workouts and JUCO workouts, since like we were talking about before the show, or you know, before we even went live, is like in-season stuff, how a lot of people like don't, I didn't even process that kind of what you're probably speaking on is like the in-season speed stuff, right?
Yeah.
That's something that I don't think I did in at all throughout like any of my college programs, but it's something that's a little bit newer. Like I remember seeing like TCU was doing like in-season stuff. People were talking about that a lot. Exactly. In-season speed training with like, I don't know what you call it, but like the weave sprints and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Right. That stuff is super crucial. I mean, even in like off season, like you said, like speed training, even then is usually used as like, oh, we're going to warm up with speed training. Like this not really taken super seriously, where it should be like in the off season, you should almost be treating it as like track workouts, and then in the season like mixing in at least some speed work to keep staying on that. And I think that's exactly. super helpful. Like in my JUCO we didn't do any in-season speed training, but we did off-season speed training, and it was extremely helpful to me. I mean, I'm a like the slowest twitch guy you've ever seen in your life, and I was like so happy when I finally ran my first like sub 4.940.
Yeah.
And it was very much like that. You know, we were going four times a week doing, doing basically like 45 minute long speed workouts of like track stuff, running, you know, repeat 200s or something like that.
Yeah.
And that stuff helps a ton.
Right.
Shout out to Rob Aiden on that. But, that's awesome, man. Yeah. Definitely sure. Agree with you on those points.
Yeah. And even with like the in-season speed stuff, right? Like for these athletes, like when is it the most important time for them to like be at top speed and at peak performance, right? Like these kids, I mean, obviously they work super hard and they do a lot of great things, but like you go to a facility all off season, you like work your butt off squatting, cleaning, speed workouts from December to August, right? Which is great, but then like when are you actually playing games? When are coaches evaluating your tape, right? Like it's from August to November. So like, why would you put in all this work during the off season just to let it all like go to waste and try to like, you know, do those things. So yeah.
Try to maintain maintenance mode.
Yeah, exactly. So.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%, man. I couldn't agree with you more. So I'm glad you're continuing on that. I think like we've started, the good thing is we're kind of getting out of that whole idea of like, you need to be a bodybuilder, not an athlete. And I think people are starting to realize that's even more drastic than we once thought. And that like, to be honest, like as an athlete, just as a football player, like, should you even be bench pressing? I don't know. That's kind of like questionable to an extent. Like, definitely you need to be doing explosive movements with your chest or to a certain extent, but like, you know, does it have to be barbell bench? Like, is that really something that matters that much? Like your max, for example.
Yeah.
So it's good that we're starting to question that, because those are things that should be questioned, to be honest.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's a really good point. Like, I've played with guys who aren't strong at all and, you know, maybe bench press like 225, for example, and like, you know, they might be leaps and bounds above guys that just live in the weight room and, you know, bench or squat like 315, 405. So,
absolutely. Well, I guess going for away from training, I know you talked about like in your recruiting process, or at least in your transfer process, you were using outreach a lot, which,
yeah,
you know, I'm a big fan of outreach. Right. So I guess tell us a little bit about like the kind of stuff that you're able to get from outreach, because I know people always say like coaches don't read emails or stuff like that, which is always hilarious.
Yeah.
No, so I'd love to hear what, you know, that no coaches love you read your emails, but yeah, would be curious to hear what happened, what you did, and just to tell people.
Yeah, definitely. No, it's actually like pretty crazy. I think I had over like 100 D1 coaches follow me in like a 4 or 5 week period, because I was just ripping emails like crazy. And, you know, I was kind of just pushing them all to my ex profile. And like I was saying, like, I didn't really even like advertise out there that like I was transferring and doing those things like that. I basically said it in the email. And then my ex account, like the bio just said, first team all conference linebacker. And I think like that's it pretty much. Like, it didn't say transfer. I didn't have like a pin post with like my highlights saying that I was a transfer, really nothing like that. So yeah, I sent out a lot of emails, had, like I said, like over 100 coaches follow me on X. And I only reached out to D1 coaches too, because like that was kind of my thought process. Like, yeah, I could go and play D2, but like I was obviously at a pretty solid program in school at Platteville. So I was kind of thinking like, you know, D1, if I get the right opportunity there, probably take it. But if not, then, you know, just like stick around for my last year at Platteville. So really only put my time, effort, and energy towards those D1s, kind of knowing coming in like what I wanted and just focused on that. But yeah, had like over 100 coaches follow me on there. It's kind of interesting because like the way that I was thinking about it and the way that I kind of see it now, it's like, it's similar to the high school process, right? But it just happens like way faster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. Like, it's like, it's the most like sudden. I always tell people that are going through the transfer thing, I'm like, you gotta be ready to move fast, because like the coaches also move fast, and that they like, if they're going to extend an offer to you, they usually give you like a very tight timeline anyway, because they're like moving through people like crazy. So
yeah, exactly.
That stuff is quick. Yeah.
No, for sure. Cause like, yeah, they obviously have their team needs and things like that. So if they have, you know, on their board, like, oh shit, we need one linebacker, right? They might have a list of, you know, 10 or 20 guys, and they're going to go through that thing. So like, instead of, you know, throughout high school, it really starts, you know, your freshman, your sophomore year. So that's like a 3 or 4 year process. Well, shit, if you're in the portal and it's one of those windows too, it could be like a 2 or 3 week process. And then it's, you know, kind of there and gone. So no, definitely staying on top of things and, you know, moving quick was super important. So
yeah, 100%, man. Yeah, that's crazy, man. Yeah, the transfer process, yeah, just moves so fast. And the crazy thing is like you said, like one of the biggest things that usually does move the stuff in terms of like transfer portal is the Twitter thing. Like when you post, hey, I'm transferring and stuff like that, like that usually is a big accelerator in the process. And so the fact that like you didn't even do that and still got all that, like didn't even have it on your bio or anything, is just honestly crazy.
Yeah.
But also goes to show how effective the outreach was for you, which is
sure.
Which is also really cool to see too.
Right.
So that's really interesting.
Yeah, I think I had just had the two links in the emails. I had a link to my Twitter and I had a link to my highlights on YouTube. And I mean, it's been months since I've seen the highlights, but it was well over 400 views. So,
Gotta love it. Gotta love it. They just never read emails, so it's real tough out there.
Yeah. No. Maybe if we just keep telling everyone that, and everyone just keeps believing it, then like we'll be the only ones to actually use email, and then like it won't be saturated, right?
Yeah. We can just tell everybody to go post on Instagram and TikTok. Yeah. That's where all the coaches are.
Yeah, for sure. Just post every day on Instagram and TikTok.
post your day in the life as a high school football player video. That's it. That's the move. That's hilarious. Cool, man. I know you obviously went through the recruiting process as well. I mean,
yeah,
obviously you've learned a lot, I'm sure, as I did through my entire time of just even post recruiting process as well. I mean, what do you feel like are some of the things that people just don't realize about the recruiting process or like college football in general that you think would be useful?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think I've learned a lot of different things going through the process twice, obviously playing at two different levels as well. Like I was saying before, people don't realize that like there's good football everywhere you go. Like just because you're playing at this level or that level, I mean, doesn't really mean anything. Like I was saying, like if you're starting and you're playing wherever it is, like you have to be a good player. You have to know the playbook. Like you have to be on top of your stuff. And that goes for literally no matter where you're at. And kind of like you said before too, like some guys coming in thinking, oh, I'll go D3 for 2 years and then maybe try and transfer up to D1.
Two years is conservative. Usually they're like, I'm going to be a one and done. One semester, I'm coming in, starter, All-American, get me out of there.
Yeah. And like, yeah, no. And like for me, like, okay, I thought I was a pretty good player. I didn't think that I was going to transfer up because that wasn't really even a thing yet. Like I graduated high school in 21, but... And like, yeah, I came in gray shirted my first year, like wasn't even like part of the team. Right. And then wasn't even a starter for the next 2 years. So shit, I was like a 3 year guy and hadn't even truly started a game yet. But then finally getting the opportunity to start my fourth year and then kind of going from there. But still, like, I didn't think that I was ever going to transfer basically until I decided to do it. So. Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of interesting how it all unfolds and things like that. But I don't know. I mean, if you go into college or you go to a D3 thinking that you're going to transfer up, like you're going to have to work your ass off. And, you know, it's probably going to take a couple of years. Like you're not going to be able to do it your first semester, your first year.
For sure. Yeah, and I'm definitely like, I mean, again, you did it. Like there's a lot of people that do, you know, transfer up and they – go on a successful path of doing so. I'm definitely never going to hate on anyone for wanting to do that. Cause I think, you know, again, you accomplish that goal of like, I think all of us have that goal of like, hey, we want to go play Division I football. Yeah. and go play in those big games. You know, you're going to be at Michigan State here in 2 weeks. Like that's going to be sick being in East Lansing. Like it's gonna be an awesome environment.
For sure.
And so, you know, all of us want to experience that obviously. So definitely would never look down on someone that wants to go do that and is looking for every avenue to do so. It's just also being realistic about it in the sense that like you said, like you have to, when you commit to your 4 year, you have to be with the idea of like, I'm going to be here for probably a while. And if I want to accomplish that goal of like potentially going to another school, like I have to work my butt off to do so. Like it's not going to come easy. And I think people sometimes, you know, think that and then they just don't act on it. And like at the end of the day, it's not really like necessarily your words that are going to do it or even your thoughts. It's like you gotta act upon that heavily and be consistent, as I'm sure you were through your entire career as you were developing as a player, and it worked out for you
for sure.
And that's, you know, you're again even a rare case of that working out where you know, it wasn't easy by any means, I imagine, you know, easy road to go down. Definitely agree with what you're saying. And you know, it's awesome and seeing it, getting to see your journey and everything, man.
Yeah, no, appreciate that. And obviously I had talked to you pretty early on in the process when I had decided to do it. So I appreciate that conversation. Like I said, like probably wouldn't be here. Hopefully I can, you know, like I said, like it's not likely that someone might be able to jump from D3 to D1 or Power 4 or really like any level. But I mean, yeah, wasn't super easy, but definitely worth it, in my opinion. And if I can kind of show someone like the path that it's possible, I mean, that's kind of why I thought I wanted to do it too, and that's why I'm here. So,
love it, man. Love it. Well, cool. I know you. I know you just had meetings not too long ago. I'm sure you're ready to get kind of wind down for the day, man. So I appreciate you coming on. Been a blast. Great conversation. Appreciate you sharing everything. Anything you want to share with anybody? I know, definitely shout out Athletes U and everything that you guys are doing over there.
Yeah, for sure. Go ahead. Me and we post on Instagram mainly. So at @athletesu_ is our handle. Feel free to go follow. We post a lot of stuff on training, you know, best practices for that, staying fast in season, preventing injuries in season, and then in the off season, preparing for camps and things like that too. So go ahead, drop a follow. Hopefully you get some value from it. We post on YouTube too, some long form stuff. So if that's your thing, go check that on YouTube.
Cool, man. Well, yeah, I appreciate the time. Appreciate you guys for watching. See you next one. Peace.